Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity, on a mission for the last 20 years to make a broader approach to cancer care, one that looks to provide holistic support to those with cancer, available to all. My guest today is someone who's been committed to increasing our knowledge of the potential of natural compounds as medicines, running a series of world-first trials and presenting the results to fellow oncologists. The show today will be focusing on the results of Professor Robert Thomas's latest trial, just published, the results of which are significant and highly relevant to the increasing number of men being diagnosed with prostate cancer. Hi Rob, fabulous to have you back as my guest on the show again.
Thank you, Robin. Always a pleasure.
Today, we're going to be talking about a disease that's been cutting a sway through our population of men for a very long time, the leading cancer in men, in fact, prostate cancer. I noticed that it accounts for a whopping 14% of all cancers and is killing 33 men a day in the UK. So I think we can say we're getting better at treating and controlling it, but the incidence is still going up relentlessly. Meanwhile, on the prevention front, the place where the real answers lie, of course, CRUK says preventable cases of prostate cancer are not known as it's not clearly linked to any preventable risk factors, which sounds like why worry, is just the luck of the draw. To me, that's a highly disempowering and fatalistic message, but is it actually true? Can I ask you, are you making any choices in your life to avoid getting prostate cancer?
Yes, prostate and many other cancers, and for that matter, lots of chronic diseases. So yeah, CRUK always go on a very, very conservative approach. I mean, you know, not everything can be proved by a double-blind randomized trial, but there are lots and lots and lots of cohort data, very good cohort data coming out of sort of the health professionals follow-up study, UK Bio Cambridge study, showing that there are lots of risk factors which correlate with a higher risk of prostate cancer. So I'm not really sure why they've said that statement. And it's a bit negative and, you know, it's going to sort of demotivate people to try to help themselves. So it's not very helpful either.
Right. Well, that's exactly my feeling. It seems that maybe the evidence isn't bulletproof or something, but so what if you're trying to help people to prevent themselves from getting prostate cancer? Anything that might help is worth knowing about.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there are some things you can't do a lot about. Being tall is one of them.
Right. Okay, that's fair enough.
Which is actually quite a strong link to...
Is it?
Yes, unfortunately. But then there's the genetics. Obviously you can be born with a genetic increased risk, but there's a thing called epigenetics, which is how your lifestyle can alter the expression of the genes you're born with. And there's a lot of data now on diet, exercise, gut health, which can alter the expression of the genes. So even if you have a higher genetic risk, you can reduce your odds. It's all about reducing your odds. But there's lots of evidence that, you know, people who exercise more than 3 hours a week have a reduced risk. I'm attending ASCO Urology in 3 weeks' time, and the session I'm in, there's another session on omega-3 intake and how people have a higher benefit. We know that people who have phytochemical-rich foods, which was things which are colorful, a nice smell and aroma. We know that Gio Vannucci published on that over 10 years ago, showing people have a significantly reduced risk of prostate cancer if they eat colorful foods. Likewise, processed meat, very strongly linked to prostate cancer risk. Being overweight and having now more recently, the attention's turned to, a history of poor gut health increases your risk. I'm not really sure how
what they're up to.
Yeah.
Maybe you want to drop them a line.
Well, I have had inroads with CRUK in the past because being a breast cancer oncologist as well as prostate, I was really getting a bit fed up with patients saying, I've looked on the CRUK website and it tells me that I can't eat any soya products or chickpeas or linseeds after breast cancer because they're potentially phytoestrogenic. And I did point out there's lots of laboratory data to say, no, even though it's got the word in the name, they actually slightly reduce your own body endogenous estrogens. And, lots of animal studies show that it actually has an anti-breast cancer mechanism. And there's three clinical trials showing that patients with breast cancer who ate more of those foods had a lower relapse rate. So there was overwhelming evidence, and yet they still kept that advice going until May last year, when they suddenly changed it and said, it's good to eat these foods after cancer. So finally the message got through. It took 10 years. No apology that they were given the wrong advice for 10 years. So let's hope in the next few years, they will change their advice for prostate cancer as well.
I think, especially against the backdrop of the fact that the government wants our healthcare to move towards prevention and health promotion and to encourage people to be more independent in looking after themselves, that's a useless message to give people, really. So the particular aspect of prostate cancer that we're talking about today is a new trial you've cooked up, which I understand is coming up with some exciting outcomes. First thing I wanted to ask, you've been involved in trials for years now, and not every oncologist does this, of course. So what got you started, and why have you focused exclusively, I think, on lifestyle measures in your trials?
I'm fortunate to lead a research unit which looks specifically at exercise, diet, and other self-help strategies, mainly to... so patients get the guidance or the evidence to know how to help themselves, not only to prevent cancer, but if you've got cancer, because there's a lot of retrospective cohort data, but not much in the way of interventional or prospective or randomized trials. So that's what we tried to correct, that deficit in knowledge. Patients are usually very, very grateful for that information. And this particular trial, we worked with three patient advocacy groups, which did a fantastic job of helping us design it to what patients want, which is what we're here for. They're usually very well received.
That particular aspect, I'm going to come back to. It's a very interesting aspect. What was this trial called?
It's got quite a long name. Basically, it's looking at a intervention where you increase daily phytochemical intake with a capsule, which sort of has already been confirmed in previous studies, but it's always to get a confirmation on that. And then more specifically, we're doing an intervention to improve gut health using a probiotic. So it's basically the trial. It's called the UK Your Phyto Study is the nickname, but it's basically looking at a phytochemical rich tablet, a probiotic tablet, and see if that alters PSA progression in men with established prostate cancer, but also this time to see if it improves their well-being and urinary symptoms. So this is a new series of endpoints.
Yeah, well, that's I noticed is actually quite a collection of endpoints you're looking at.
And, yeah.
It's useful because you're sort of creaming off a lot of data off one trial. What made you pick those particular ones? And is it difficult to manage them all?
Yes. I mean, this cohort of men in the study are men with prostate cancer who don't immediately require any radiotherapy or surgery or brachytherapy.
Okay.
So they're being sort of watched. As it happens, most of the people in the trial were progressing slightly because it's just the way we get the referrals from the urologists that they tend to refer them over to us when their PSA starts going up. So it was the active surveillance group, but people who were sort of heading towards an intervention.
Okay.
And obviously they're very conscious of their PSA, which in this setting is actually very useful. PSA is not a very good tool as a screening tool, but once you've already been diagnosed and you've got lots of points on the graph, when the PSA starts climbing, you know that something's going on. And so patients, you know, it's quite important. So that's one endpoint. And the other endpoint was obviously MRI, where you could actually measure the tumor size, which is probably the gold standard or more difficult to get to more frequently. And then, of course, a lot of men are symptomatic. So they are getting up at night to pass water, have urgency or a slow stream, which wasn't previously recorded in any sort of lifestyle type studies. And some have erectile dysfunction. Those are very important endpoints for men.
Yeah.
The other thing we looked at, which is quite novel, because this study is actually linked with Stacey Kenfield, who's the head of the Health Professional Follow-Up Studies in America, which very much looks at exercise and cancer. And we felt a sort of exercise endpoint would be useful. And we chose grip strength, which is a marker of overall well-being, particularly in more older people, which are, you know, the average age in this trial was 74. And we've got some really interesting data around grip strength as well.
Fascinating. Okay, well, look, let's come back to this co-design of the trial. It's a unique feature, I think. I've never heard it anyway. Over the years, I consistently hear from people that they get an opportunity to take part in a trial that could offer some hope, where maybe there isn't much. But the parameters of the trial are such they're expected to stop all the other efforts they are making to stay well.
Yeah.
And you can see why the trial designers might want this, but on a personal level of attempting to save your life, well, it's pretty unacceptable. So, you know, all the entrants on the trial are supposed to sort of altruistically sacrifice themselves on the altar of research. You seem to come up with a novel solution. Do you want to tell us about it?
So ultimately, when we started this trial, we really were interested in whether a sort of high-dose probiotic or an intervention to improve gut health would have an impact in cancer progression, because that's never been shown before. Despite a lot of correlation between people with poor gut health having cancer, there wasn't anything to say, well, could you do something about it and reduce your progression? So we went to three patient support groups, Melton Mowbray, Cambridge, and Bedford. And we said, look, we're just going to randomize high dose probiotic or placebo.
Right.
And you have to stop everything else. And they went, no.
Okay.
Because as you know, about 70% of men with prostate take some sort of supplement. I said, right, okay. And then we tried to do a design where we had like four different limbs and it got quite complicated. And they said, but what we would do then, because a lot of them take these phytochemical rich supplements, so some of them, you know, the old pomi tea or other, you know, turmeric or, you know, some mushroom extracts. And they said, you come up with what you think the best phytochemical rich supplement is, give it to us in the trial, then we'll stop everything else, and then you can randomize the probiotic. So if you know, it seems an unusual design, but you know, all three groups said the same thing. So we thought, well, if we want people to go into the trial, we have to give patients what they want. So then we did a lot of research looking at, you know, what is now, what would you regard as the best evidence for these sort of nutritional interventions? So we already had some data for turmeric, green tea, broccoli, and pomegranate. And since then, we've noticed that the cranberry has some effect on PSA, and organic ginger is a very good bioenhancer. So it encourages the absorption of polyphenols and phytochemicals through the gut wall.
Right.
And also there's, you know, that we've got sort of 14 years of food technology. There are ways of actually improving the phytochemical content of each food without getting rid of the diversity. So you can get, you can use whole turmeric, but then you can add in curcuminoids. You can use pomegranate, but add in the phytochemical to enhance its potency.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So it's actually the I think as far as we know, the only supplement in the world which combines whole, concentrated whole foods plus an extract. Usually it's one or the other.
Right. Yeah.
So it's got the whole food plus extracts, which is novel. It's also got now two new ingredients. And with better food development or supplement developments, you can standardize, so you can actually measure the levels of phytochemicals within each ingredient, so you know that every batch is fairly similar, which is also novel.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, the long and short of it, we developed that, got someone to make it for us, and it's now called Your Phyto, which is obviously if it does well, they will benefit from that, but we don't. We get it free, which is our benefit.
Yes,
but no financial connection over that. So all the men were on randomization, had to stop everything, and were given this. And we knew the PSA 4 months before trial entry, because most of these men had been watched for a bit. And we were able to see if that supplement had an impact. And then they were randomized to the probiotic. The only thing we didn't stop, because the ethics committee was quite rightly pointed at, and the patients themselves, we didn't stop vitamin D.
Okay.
Because the trial was going into it was started in sort of September, going into the winter. We do know that low vitamin D can encourage prostate cancers to grow faster. So we did allow vitamin D, but that was the only one we allowed.
Okay. Do they have a standard amount of vitamin D?
No, that's the problem. But, I mean, they take all sorts of different doses, or not at all, or you know.
Right. Were you tempted to include that in the supplement regime?
Well, it is in the probiotic, which is the one we chose for various reasons. One, it's already been used in our center for our last COVID study.
Yes,
and there was the feedback was absolutely fantastic. Loads of people said they were feeling better, they felt stronger, their gut symptoms improved, and it was safe. And it does actually have 1,000 international units of vitamin D in it, but that bit is randomized. So, and it's double blind, so we wouldn't know if people were on vitamin D or not. The men themselves said, I'm not going to stop my vitamin D because I might be in the group which didn't have the vitamin.
I see that.
And also, primarily the vitamin D was in it because it's actually a prebiotic. It's little known fact that vitamin D encourages healthy bacterial growth. It's one of the reasons how it works, and also there's inulin as well as a prebiotic. So, So that was that's the reason why we allowed people to continue the vitamin D. We did measure vitamin D at the end, and it was slightly greater in obviously the group which was subsequently randomized to the probiotic and vitamin D. But what we were pleased was there wasn't many people who were below normal levels in the control group, which we didn't want.
No, that's right. You wouldn't have known whether it was confounding the results then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting. Okay. So you found it relatively easy to get your cohort of men that you wanted them?
Yes. Well, we already had three groups of people who were very keen to enter. They were quite strict criteria. We recruited basically 220 men within basically 6 months, which at one stage it was the fastest recruiting double-blind randomized trial in the UK.
Yeah, that sounds good. Great. Well, I am sure that the sort of co-design part of it must have had a big effect on your ability to recruit people. It makes complete sense as the first thing. Second is it's really what I call patient-centered evidence that you're gathering. You've completely removed that sacrificial altar here, and you've said to people, yeah, of course you want to stay alive, you want to do your very best. So we'll build that in as the sort of baseline that we're working from. And you still manage to get the difference between the people who are having the gut boost as opposed to the others, which is what you're looking for. So, excellent.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you're entirely right. I mean, you say to a patient, well, first of all, they get all the supplements free in the study, which is obviously a bonus.
Yeah.
Secondly, they are familiar with those ingredients of the one they're getting free, the York Phyto. And more and more actually we're seeing that gut health actually has an influence on prostate cancer. But when we started the study, which was about a year ago, it was sort of very much unknown. So most people were quite happy to be randomized to something where we really had no idea whether it would have any effect or not.
Right. Yeah, that's fair enough. And of course, the patients want to know that as much as you do. Really? So it's a real partnership and not just people submitting to being lab rats. So, it's brilliant. So I hope some other trial designers are taking note.
Yes, indeed.
So now to the exciting bit, the results. Let's start off with talking to the old tried, if not entirely trusted as much as it was, measure the PSA, the prostate-specific antigen. How did things go on that front?
Good, very good. Look, research is important whether it's positive or negative, but you always feel slightly better if it's positive, don't you? But because even negative trials can add to the pool of knowledge,
of course.
You shouldn't be obsessed with that. But that said, this was a double blind, so all the data gets audited by an external auditor, sent off to the statistician, and we were very excited to see that there was a majorly statistically significant reduction in PSA before and after. So most people in the trial, the PSA was going up at about 20% over 4 months, and then it dropped to about 20% after the intervention with the York Phyto. So that 40% difference in it wasn't progressing, it was stabilizing. I mean, some people progress and some people drop significantly. We're talking about averages.
Yes.
Was highly significant. It's a factor of P0001, which means it's less than 10,000 to one chance it could have happened randomly, by chance.
Right.
And then obviously we looked at that was the impact of the phytochemicals. And then we looked at whether the probiotic had any difference, and it was it was also significant. So men who were received the phytochemical rich supplements plus the yogurt plus or the lactobacillus had an even greater reduction in their PSA compared to people who just had the phytochemicals. And that's a world first because that's never been shown in a double-blind randomized trial that there's a reduction in PSA. And, you know, also with a level playing field. So when I stand up in ASCO in San Francisco next week and people say, oh, yeah, but, you know, were the groups not balanced or were they also taken? Well, you can say quite clearly no, because all the other factors such as, you know, weight, height, grade of tumor, all have been taken into account. And despite all those factors, there was a highly statistically different. So we can safely say that a measure to improve gut health slows prostate cancer progression.
That's fantastic. And what kind of percentage are you adding with the...
It was about another 13% difference between the two groups.
Right. Quite a bit then, eh? Quite significant.
Yeah, this is looking at rate of rise. I mean, the numbers in absolute terms, fortunately, still quite low. I mean, they range from about 4 to 10. But in percentage terms, there was, you know, and there was a good number of people. So 220 means the statisticians are quite happy with the calculation. You know, the power, yes. The statistical power is there to say that.
Well, it's fantastic. I mean, that's the kind of information that's gold dust to men. I mean, because the difference between a PSA that's slowly going up and one that's going down even slowly is massive, isn't it? Because going up is actually exponential, isn't it? I mean, it may be rising slowly now, but it won't be soon.
It can go up and down, but in these group of men, a lot of them were referred by the urologist whose PSA had been climbing, you know, for 6 months to a year before.
Right.
And they were sort of, so in that group, you know, they were clearly heading if it had carried on going up for an intervention. So that's encouraging that you're preventing people. You know, since the trial's finished, what I've also noticed is we're still seeing the PSA falling 6 months, 9 months later in some people. So it does look like it's sustained. We are recording the data going forward, of course, and we'll do a follow-up.
Right.
But encouragingly, it seems to be even better the longer you take them, which sort of makes sense, but it's nice to see it.
Yeah, it's amazingly powerful information. I mean, it's a total win-win when you find something like this, because it's not only does, of course, the patients like it to avoid some horrendous treatment, which is going to be very likely debilitating, and to carry on having a good life, it's fantastic. But think of the money saved as well for the health service.
Yes, because these we even though they got them free from the manufacturers, we can't prescribe them. The NHS can't prescribe them once the trial's finished, which was a little bit of a problem, to be honest, although we did tell people in advance, because they're classed as foods. So unfortunate. Although we do give people a very extensive dietary sheet saying how to improve gut health and how to increase phytochemical intake, number one. But if they do want to carry on taking the supplements, they unfortunately have to buy them. But nevertheless, even if the NHS prescribed them, they're still only, you know, £15 a month rather than £3,000 a month.
Yes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. Good.
I mean, you're pointing towards a way of working that needs to change for the NHS, because the NHS is supposed to be doling out medicines, and at the moment is doling out drugs, which are drugs may be medicines, but other things are as well, as you are clearly showing. And the fact they're not able to pay for these very cheap medicines, which are obviously doing a good job and saving them a lot of money, is a mistake, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tricky because the MHRA, you know, we have to, I mean, it takes, when you say a trial takes 6 months, you ignore the fact there's actually 2 years of bureaucracy to get that trial started. And you have
yes.
the meetings. And one of the meetings with, you know, not only ethics, but, you know, trial registration and also MHRA. And they actually say the only condition they will let you do a trial, which is very nice of them, you know, not pay any money, is that you won't apply for a license. So you have to actually, in advance, swear that you'll never bother them with trying to get a license for a therapy which works very well. So it's they got you by the, you know.
They've
tackled you from the start.
Yeah. Have they got any kind of justification for making you sign that?
Because if it's, if you try to go for drug status or prescribe, then the level of you know, every ingredient would have to be broken down to the exact constituents, and it's for them, they, you know, it would require years and years and years of further laboratory data before they would allow a license, which is fair enough. So they say you can do it, but
yeah,
you know, and it's just not. There's only a very few plants which have got a license. Medical cannabis has a license,
yeah. Yes,
but under strict growing, and that's one plant. And if you've got a supplement with six different plants, it would be almost impossible to go through the current level of safety and quality assurance to call it a drug. But maybe there should be a different category, which aren't drugs.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's clearly the answer. Yeah, yeah, trying to make food into drugs is not going to work. Right. That's what you're saying. Yeah. We need to be able to prescribe food as medicine. And we could, I think it's true to say that we can now begin to prescribe exercise as medicine, can't we?
That's true. That's very good. Yes, that's a good analogy. So it is changing. You can send people to the gym and have a 12-week exercise program. In most areas, and so that is very true. I mean, there are some situations that I think if you've got macular degeneration of your eye, there are there are some supplements which are allowed to be prescribed or given. You know, that's something is certainly on our target to try to work on. If you've got a supplement which has gone through a double-blind randomized trial, and it's, you know, gone through all the loops and hurdles to make it kosher and auditable data, maybe they should relax or have an independent category for those.
Yeah. Okay. Well, certainly something to talk about. Tell me how do things look on the MRI?
So MRI, we managed to get, not on everyone, because not everyone, you know, some of the patients are quite elderly, they don't need an MRI, and some don't want an MRI. So we got them in 180 patients, so the majority. And, you know, not everyone in the trial responded. So there were some people who progressed. But reassuringly, the people who did progress, their PSA significantly increased. So what that means is there was nobody with a progression on MRI whose PSA had dropped.
Right.
And it was only, I think, 9 patients who'd progressed on MRI. And that's really important because some people are saying these foods could mask a PSA, which is not our experience. So everyone who was progressing, their PSA had significantly elevated. So there's no masking effect.
Right. It's coherent data. Yeah, that's very good. And you said there were 9 who progressed. So that's quite a low percentage, isn't it?
Oh, no, that was on MRI. We got other people who progressed on their PSA.
Okay.
But many of the people who progress on PSA, their MRI doesn't show any difference.
I see. So the percentage that it didn't help was about what?
It depends what you define as helping, really. You could say how many people's PSA actually dropped Would you say about 30%? How many did it significantly slow the rate of progression? Which is probably about another 40%. And then there was some whose PSA actually carried on going up, and a few actually carried on going up quite fast. And then there were those we needed to pull out immediately and treat.
Right.
So the important thing is you need to observe these men and, you know, not accept it as a failure if they do need a treatment. And I know you said the side effects are horrendous. Then they're not always horrendous. I mean, the improvements with radiotherapy and surgery are quite significant, but nevertheless, they do have risks. So it's trying to avoid those risks.
Anyway, the message is for the vast majority, it is some help.
Yes, very much so. And not just with the PSA. And what was nice this time is we measured erectile function and urinary symptoms with quite detailed questionnaires.
Right. I'm interested in that.
There was a marginal improvement in erectile function for some men, which they were grateful for. I wouldn't say it was, you know, you were talking about, I think it was about 14% improvement. So it's relatively small, but, you know, might be significant for some. But there was a slightly bigger improvement in urinary symptoms, so the getting up less at night, less urgency, which you would imagine for a strategy which aims to reduce inflammation in your body, including the prostate. And that was quite welcome because, you know, it's you're not sleeping at night. It can trigger, you know, fatigue and all sorts of other issues.
Yeah. Now, these are important things. They can get quite spoil some people's life and have to go around worrying about where the nearest toilet is all the time. It's not fun. Yeah, so that's great. And you're right. It's completely what you'd expect in a way from this anti-inflammatory approach that you're taking, that these things would calm down a bit.
There's another point we did was grip strength. Now, this was Stacey Kenfield, who's the head of a large research department in University in Southern California, head of lots and lots of very well-known studies, and Rob Newton in Australia. They were quite keen on this. I mean, it's a very easily recordable number. You just squeeze this device and it correlates with lots of things. It correlates with how, you know, you can actually, it correlates with heart disease, diabetes, risk of dementia. It's amazing.
Wow.
It's such a simple thing, and it's a very good objective measure in a study. There's even some studies correlating it with mortality. So, you know, so anyway, but it's never been correlated against PSA or prostate cancer progression. So we found two things, which were both world firsts, which seem obvious, but it's, nevertheless, we proved it, that men who had a higher grip strength were less likely to progress. So looking at the whole group, which is, you know, worth noting, but fairly obvious, really, I think. But anyway, it's not been previously documented. And the other thing is we found that grip strength improved statistically after the intervention.
Wow.
So the Your Phyto on its own improved grip strength by about 10%. And in the group which had the Your Gut Plus the probiotics, it improved it another 10%.
That's a lot.
So there was a 20, and it was about 25% in total. So it was about a 25% improvement in grip strength. And the patients who did have the best improvement in grip strength had the best reduction in PSA. So there was a strong correlation between people who got stronger and reducing their rate of progression. Now, that has enormous implications.
It does.
So you're not just saying, go to the gym because you'll feel better. We're now actually saying, go to the gym and it will reduce your rate of progression, which is much more of an incentive, I think, for men to put on their training shoes and go and start lifting some weights.
Mm. Just, I just want to go to get the how these things are connected straight in my mind. So obviously your intervention gave them greater strength. Well, that wasn't going to the gym. So that was actually taking your protocol that did that. But And that, in turn, reduced their PSA. So that's excellent. But you're also saying that it was the increase in strength was actually the thing that was having the effect on the PSA. So if they get it through training, that's just as good.
Well, that's hard to say. I mean, you do the correlation, and you don't. You know, my theory is we've written lots of papers on how phytochemical-rich foods improve athletic performance and also improve people's ability to exercise, because they sort of slightly give you a better mood. They help gut health. They reduce joint pains. So they help you sleep. So all these things add up to wanting you to do more exercise.
Yes.
And also, you know, athletes and cyclists, they love these foods because they're full of nitrates, which improve oxygenization and recovery and things like that. But that's probably a different level to what I'm talking about with men with prostate cancer. And we also know that people with poor gut health are a little bit demotivated to exercise. They recover badly after exercise. They get more muscle pain and joint pains. So both of those combined, we know will stop people exercising. But what we've now shown is you can do an intervention to improve those, and they do exercise more. We also know, because we measured exercise levels, and it was higher as well. So, but we're concentrating just on grip strength because it has the most robust data attached to it.
Right. And so on the principle of improving your odds in every way, you would naturally, of course, do both if you had any sense.
Yes.
Yeah. Amazing.
100%, Robert.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, that was such great information. Can you quickly tell me the relationship between all of that and testosterone levels?
Ah, good question. Fortunately, because we've done a similar trial 14 years ago, we had all these questions asked to us, but you couldn't answer them. So we did measure testosterone this time. We measured lots and lots of things like thyroid function, testosterone, cortisol, just in case there was some weird thing which you know, maybe all the benefit is because their testosterone went up, you know.
Right.
But there was statistically no difference at all,
okay,
between testosterone levels in the two groups. Mainly because we didn't want people to say that these foods could drop testosterone levels and that's why you're seeing a response.
Right.
If anything, testosterone levels in people not on hormones might well improve with improved gut health, because we know that independently is already being shown. But, you know, this is a group of men in their 70s. So, you know, the main effect we're checking is that these interventions don't drop the testosterone and hence drop the PSA, and that's the mechanism.
Yeah. No, well, it's great to separate that out. It's really fantastic information to pull together. So, groundbreaking trial, fantastic results. Results maybe many people working within lifestyle medicine might have predicted, but we didn't have the evidence. And now it's there. And coming back to those fatalistic messages we opened with, it's looking like there's everything to play for when it comes to lifestyle interventions if you've got prostate cancer. And if you want to know what to do to prevent it, start looking in the same places. This kind of lifestyle approach to treatment is intimately linked with prevention as well. It's the same factors at play.
I believe so. It's harder to do preventative studies because they will have to last a lot longer.
Yes.
And have more patients. But, you know, the when you look at the published data, they seem to be very similar between, you know, the endpoints are very similar to the preventative studies and the prevention of progression, and also, you know, the prevention of relapse after radical treatment. So I agree with you. I think it applies to everyone. And I think also this data empowers doctors who often are a bit unsure what to tell patients. So even if they don't want to say, you know, these supplements were beneficial, I think they're empowered to say that phytochemical-rich foods and strategies to improve your gut health are definitely worthwhile. Right. If you want to take it up a notch, then that's up to the individual. But I think it's just empowering doctors to give slightly more lifestyle-related advice than they perhaps previously would have done.
Excellent. Well, I'm listening. And spread the word wide and far. All right. Thank you very much indeed, Rob. It was a fascinating interview.
Thank you very much for having me, as usual.
Okay.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
As ever, Professor Thomas has clearly broken new ground in designing and running such a practical trial of natural products. Not only has he produced vital scientific data, but he's taken an important step to make research more genuinely patient-focused in the way he's collaborated with participants in the study design to ensure that as far as possible all aspects of the trial are in line with patient needs and their aims. The potential of such research is immense, as possibly for the first time, all parties are aligned in their aims. A reminder that tickets are on sale for the Yes to Life annual conferences online on March the 29th and in person in London on the 27th of September. Both go under the title of What's Really Working, with the online event showcasing presentations from specialists around the globe, while the in-person conference will be more focused on UK-based resources. The prices for both events are pitched to make them as accessible as possible, with an unmissable deal for a combined ticket to both, if you're within striking distance of London. To find out more, go to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and look under the events menu. Thank you so much for listening today. I'll be back again, as usual, next week with another expert guest, so I hope you can join me again for the next Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.